1520.
Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington on this live broadcast from Studio 14. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Monday, May 8, 2023. A Sudanese special envoy delivers General Al-Burhan's message to President Kiir.
I would like to assure everybody that we are concerned with the situation of our civilians. We are concerned with their protection, with their safety.
And a senior South Sudanese official appeals to well-wishers to help families fleeing the conflict in Sudan.
What happened now is actually worsening the situation of humanitarian in the country. As I told you, we as the ministry and our partners, we have been actually working to respond to the needs of humanitarian assistance.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudanese special envoy says the government is committed to restoring peace and security across the country. Ali Dafalla met with President Salva Kiir in Juba earlier today. South Sudan's acting foreign minister says President Kiir considers the conflict in Sudan as, quote, a Sudanese conflict that requires only an internal solution. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
Speaking to reporters shortly after a closed-door meeting with President Kiir, Dafalla said the government in Khartoum is concerned about the protection and safety of civilians.
I would like to assure everybody that we are concerned with the situation of our civilians. We are concerned with their protection, with their safety. That is why the army didn't adopt severe measures to put an end to that conflict. Had we want to do that, the army has the ability to do it in a very short time. But the safety and protection of our civilians is a priority.
Delegations of Sudan Armed Forces and Rapid Support Forces began talks in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia on Friday to try to reach a ceasefire. Dafalla says the Jeddah talks will only concentrate on the humanitarian aspect of the conflict. He says the conflict in Sudan will only be resolved when the paramilitary rapid support forces accept to lay down their weapons.
I will quote again what has been voiced by President Burhan when he said, if this rebellion put down arms, we will pardon them. We will pardon them. Not only pardon them, we will be ready to reintegrate whoever is interested to be part and parcel of the Sudanese army. I don't think, you know, a legal president would start talks regarding the final settlement with the leader of a rebellion.
The Intergovernmental Authority on Development appointed President Kiir to lead regional efforts to help the warring parties to peacefully resolve their conflict. Ding Dao Ding, South Sudan's acting foreign affairs minister, says President Salva Kiir reiterated his position to Al-Burhan's special envoy during the meeting.
Our interest is the stability and peace in Sudan. And peace in Sudan is peace in South Sudan. His Excellency the President have conveyed this message to the special envoy, and he also asked him that he will continue to talk to President Burhan on the situation. The President shared with the special envoy our situation in 2013, the situation that happened here, the situation that happened in 2016, and how him, as the President of South Sudan, was able to reach out and was able to bring about peace that we are enjoying today. You compare this particular situation with what is happening in Sudan.
Ding says President Kiir has also warned some unnamed external actors against interfering in Sudan's conflict. The acting foreign minister says South Sudan has also extended an invitation for General Mohamed Abdan Daglo to send an envoy to Juba for more talks with President Salva Kiir. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
South Sudan's humanitarian affairs minister says the influx of people fleeing the conflict in neighboring Sudan has worsened an already dire humanitarian situation in South Sudan. Albino Attack says his ministry has conducted 15 trips to evacuate South Sudanese who fled Sudan and were stuck at the South Sudan-Sudan border. For VOA News, Juliana Shiapai reports from Juba.
A senior South Sudanese official says the humanitarian crisis in the country has worsened due to the influx of people fleeing the war in Sudan. On March 30th, the South Sudan government said it needed $1.7 billion to address the country's humanitarian situation. South Sudan's Minister for Humanitarian Affairs and Disaster Management, Albino Akol Attack, spoke to reporters in Juba earlier today about the looming humanitarian situation created by the conflict in Sudan.
What happened now is actually worsening the situation of humanitarian in the country. As I told you, we as the ministry and our partners, we have been actually working to respond to the needs of humanitarian assistances or to respond to the people in need in this year, 2023.
Attack says the government is on standby to organize flights for families fleeing from the conflict in Sudan. He says some of the people crossing from Sudan will be flown from Reng to their final destination to avoid another crisis in Juba.
As soon as we get confirmation that airstrip of Reng is now ready to receive the bigger planes because it was under maintenance, we will immediately dispatch these planes to bring people to where they are going. But also, we are considering river transportation. We have gone far in that assessment that we will be taking a lot of people from Reng up to Juba here. But not everybody who is coming to, not everybody is coming to Juba, but we will take those people who are coming, for instance, up an aisle, they will come to Malakal. And then the rest continues. Some will get down in Bantu, Pagak, Shambe, where we will be waiting. Our trucks will be waiting for those who are going to Lakes State, for instance, and other areas in Bargazal. And then the rest will continue. Some will get down in Bor, and then some will come up to Juba here.
Minister Attack says his ministry appreciates the effort of all South Sudanese businessmen who paid for the transportation of the people fleeing the conflict of Sudan. He is calling on all well-wishers to coordinate with the government for any future plans.
And this is why, while we are thanking people, we are calling for coordination so that we do it in the best way, so that we don't create another problem. And I always cite this example. Those who rush to bring, to evacuate people from Palu, yes, they did best. But also, if we continue just evacuating people to one place, for instance, Juba, and those people, they don't know where they are going, it means we are just transferring the suffering of the people in Palu Airport to Juba Airport. We have not resolved any problem. And this is the responsibility of the ministry. This is why we say the best way is for us to ask them, where are they going, and we take them. This is the real help that we can offer to them.
The Minister of Humanitarian Affairs says the people fleeing the conflict in Sudan are entering the country from several crossing points, adding that the humanitarian needs of the returnees are alarming. He says officials are working with the humanitarian agencies to establish camps to accommodate the families fleeing the conflict in some parts of Sudan. For VOA News, I am Juliana Shiapai in Juba.
The International Committee of the Red Cross says patients with gunshot-related injuries continue to overwhelm its facilities in South Sudan despite the relative peace across the country. A senior ICRC official in South Sudan says in 2022, the organization treated more than 1,000 people with gunshot wounds. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
Andrea Hayes, the ICRC deputy head of delegation in South Sudan, says vicious cycle of violence due to intercommunal disputes and cattle raids has left many people with gunshot injuries.
A quarter of the patients treated with gunshot wounds in these two units are women and children. The continuous influx of weapon-wounded cases due to the armed hostilities and violence keeps the two surgical teams ICRC has in the country fully occupied in Juba and in Akobo.
He spoke at the opening ceremony of a new theater at Juba's military hospital. She says ICRC Surgical conducted many operations last year at the military hospital.
It is noteworthy that in 2022 alone, the ICRC surgical team at the JMH performed 137 surgeries in total on 257 admitted patients.
ICRC says it is equipping its facilities across the country to respond to gunshot-related incidences. He says the new modern operating theater at the Juba Military Hospital, which is run by the ICRC, will save patients from gunshot-related injuries, including those fleeing violence in Sudan. And by the ICRC, will save patients from gunshot-related injuries, including those fleeing violence in Sudan.
The new OT also aims to ensure the continuity of coherent surgical care provision and to strengthen the surgical capacity building of the local staff. It has also the potential to address the needs of wounded patients entering the country from Sudan due to the ongoing armed conflict there, if needed.
Aktam El Farnawani is a senior anesthesiologist at Juba Military Hospital. He says most of the cases recorded last year were from the Equatorial region.
I have to say there are weeks where we can be receiving maybe one or two cases or three cases per week. Some weeks we might be receiving 15 or 20 cases. Last year there was a week where we had a mass influx of maybe 40 cases were flew from by a flight from Equatoria to here, from Kimutong to our OT. So the flow of cases is quite variable.
May 8th is the World Red Cross and Red Crescent Day. It is a time to celebrate the spirit of humanitarianism and recognize the individuals who make a difference in their communities. This year's theme is Everything We Do Comes From the Heart. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a new UN report says South Sudan has violated the arms embargo. Find out more after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
What do you do on the weekends?
Over the weekend, I happen to read my books, the novels, and sometimes I go for my leisure time, play pool tables, and watch football because I'm a fan of Arsenal.
Weekends, most of the time I listen to music, I go to the beach, I hang out with my friends. Sometimes I go to the clubs, but mostly, most of my time I'm always with my mom.
It is very good. Weekend is something where you can enjoy your life with either your boyfriends, girlfriends, your friends, and colleagues sometime. So it can be in form of swimming, playing football, and watching football. I'm a great fan of football.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay at home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. A new report by a UN panel of experts on South Sudan has accused Juba of breaching an arms embargo imposed on the country in 2018. South Sudan's Minister of Information and Government spokesperson admits the country bought some military vehicles but insists the country did not violate the arms embargo. For VOA News, Denga Iden reports from Bor.
The report says at least 10 Hamad personnel carriers were flagged off by President Salva Kiir in December last year for a regional peacekeeping mission to the Democratic Republic of Congo. South Sudan's government passed a supplementary budget of $6.69 million for the deployment of its army contingent as part of the East African Regional Force to fight the Congolese rebels of M23. The spokesperson of the South Sudan's People's Defense Force, Major General Lul Rai Kong, declined to comment on the accusations in the report.
I will not comment. I'm not in the country. I'm abroad. I'm a barman ballot. And lo, I'm a barman ballot. I'm not allowed to comment. So you get in touch, most likely get in touch with the Minister of Foreign Affairs or the presidential press spokesperson or the government spokesperson. These are the right people since I'm away.
The South Sudan's government spokesperson, Michael McQuay, admitted the government bought the vehicles but insists the country has not violated the arms embargo.
We bought cars for the army, just ordinary cars. Not military, not anything else. But if they are saying that don't buy any cars, then that is a different thing. I really doubt it. It's the military equipment which are prohibited, but just a car for mobility is not a violation.
In 2018, the UN Security Council imposed an arms embargo on South Sudan to end a prevailing civil war at that time. South Sudan's government has over the years been lobbying members of the UN Security Council to lift the embargo. The UN panel has urged the international community to take action against those who are responsible for the breaches of the arms embargo. The UN panel of experts report also noted that continued delay by South Sudan authorities to implement provisions of a post-war peace agreement could plunge the country into further chaos, since many nationals are losing hope in the transition process. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
Gunmen have shot dead a journalist in the capital of Cameroon's restive northwest region, Bamenda, the third to be killed in the country this year. The region has spread clashes since 2017 between Cameroon's military and the English-speaking separatists. Colleagues and families of Nye So, bureau chief of the weekly newspaper The Advocate, say he was killed at a bar in what they believe was a targeted killing. Muki Edwin Kinzika reports from Cameroon, Yaoundé.
Cameroon journalist says scores of civilians and reporters on Monday visited the Bamenda residence of reporter Anyen Deso to sympathize with his family. Nso was killed in Bamenda, capital of Cameroon's northwest region, on Sunday night. Jude Muma, local president of the Cameroon Association of English-Speaking Journalists, CAMASEJ, says he led a delegation of several dozen reporters that visited Nso's family. He spoke via telephone from Bamenda.
I speak to you from the family compound and the family in great pain. Anyende So has a baby. The mother of the baby is uncontrollable. Anyende So's family is in pain. Neighbors are in pain. Colleagues of the journalism profession are also here in pain that Anyende So is no more.
Cameroon media reports that scores of civilians in the southwest region also visited the head office of the Advocate newspaper to sympathize with colleagues of the killed reporter. The newspaper's publisher, Taya Enobika Tabe, says Saul was professionally upright and good-humored and says he cannot understand why someone would kill him. Taya says he had a long telephone conversation with Saul just hours before the reporter was killed.
2 hours after, I edited his stories, finished talking to him. I had a call that he was shot. This guy was an aspiring young journalist, full of the spirit to work and to serve. A very humble young man is gone. It's a big loss to the Cameroon press. I use the possibility again to condemn the killings of journalists. In fact, they are soft targets. So sad.
Charles Embola, publisher of Volcanic Times newspaper, says his organization is investigating Nsor's death and has spoken with several witnesses and officials in Bamenda.
From every indication, it was more of a targeted killing because the guys came in on a bike and went straight and shot him on the chest, and our colleague died on the spot. No other person in that public space was a target.
It was not clear whether the killing was related to the ongoing battle between Cameroon government troops and separatists in the northwest and southwest regions. Separatist forces are trying to split off the regions where most people speak English as an independent state from French-speaking majority Cameroon. The International Crisis Group reports that 6,000 people have been killed since 2017. So far, no one has claimed responsibility for the death of Nso. Cameroon's military says Nso was killed by separatist fighters but gives no possible motives. Separatists on social media denied involvement in his killing, while a separatist leader, Capo Daniel, said Nso was the victim of a case of mistaken identity. Nso is the third journalist to be killed in Cameroon in 2023. Earlier this year, investigative journalist Martinez Zogu and radio presenter Jean-Jacques Olabebe were killed in the capital Yaoundé. Cameroonian journalists say they remain fearful and have reported killings and threats on journalists to the police. Speaking during World Press Freedom Day activities in Yaoundé, Cameroon's communication minister René Emmanuel Sadi assured reporters of government protection in the exercise of their duties. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
That story by Kinzeka brings us to the end of our show for this Monday. We now leave you with Emmanuel Kembe and the song Kafara Lesiasa.
Anina al-mazlumin ginadil ashan shunu deya ashan nam ni belet na Sudan jadid ashan takani fi huria fi Sudan jadid lakin malu pinastanin gishakil ashan kursi ugurush Shan kursi ugurush tishufu malela figaba ubukura fi medina bijere legaba ubirijale jalaba alela figaba ubukura fi medina lama isekin figaba bijere lejalaba Ruwa legaba kam alf miskin bim
moto besa babo olama rijala jalaba come alif miskin be moto ya de for example Batusika Uriatana Kursi Ugurush Gikarabusika Uriatana Kuluzola Uzukun Ben Kuluzola Uzukun Sultan Ufaida Mafile Junub Kuluzola Uzukun Ben Kuluzola Uzukun Sultan Ufaida mafile junub Tishofum
Listen to what the men and men say Lord and Emmanuel can't beg Getting spiritual, never cold with a message That's really long
We've been listening to Emmanuel Kembe and the song Kafara Le Siasa. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you missed this broadcast, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and our engineer, we wish you a good evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
For the sake of Southern Sudan, the war caused by money and position, persecution of religion, Jalalabad against our brethren, Muslims against Christians, which tells me that there's already a holy war existing. If there's a North and South division, how will Janub being be living? And Salami remains to be seen in the Janub. Or will everyone try and hurt each other for the Kursi and Gurush?
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
One of the chief downsides of an increasingly connected world is the ability of pathogens to migrate across the globe at the speed of a passenger airplane. Speaking at the Center for Global Development in Washington in late April, USAID Administrator Samantha Power said the risk factors that help new pathogens emerge and spread quickly have grown, and they are still growing.
As humans destroy forests and other habitats to feed and house a growing population, and as conflict and climate disasters like wildfires and prolonged droughts push animals and humans out of their existing homes, wildlife and people are coming into closer contact with one another, making it easier, as we all know, for diseases to jump from animals to humans. And in an increasingly globalized world, these pathogens can quickly spread across communities, countries, and continents.
Indeed, recent experiences with the spread of infectious diseases, including the COVID-19 pandemic, multi-country cholera, and the Uganda Ebola outbreak, clearly indicate when it comes to the response to global health emergencies, there is an urgent need for standardized and centralized operational processes. That is why USAID introduced the Global Health Emergency Management System, a new initiative that will help us tackle multiple crises quickly at one time, said Administrator Power.
USAID's long history of marshaling rapid and effective responses to humanitarian crises has taught us that success in an emergency relies on just that. It relies on having a system in place to rapidly deploy surge funding and staff and to coordinate a response across relevant bureaus at USAID and across our large U.S. government. The new Global Health Emergency Response System is going to help us do just that.
The Global Health Emergency Management System will enable USAID to support overseas personnel with swift identification of health funding. It will also allow for rapid deployment of staff to augment country and regional capacity and coordinate the implementation of leadership decisions across USAID. Finally, it will strengthen engagement with interagency partners. We have to build the world's capacity to prevent, detect, and respond to all infectious disease outbreaks, whether they're caused by new COVID-19 COVID variants, existing threats, or emerging pathogens, said Administrator Power. Disease outbreaks are urgent national security risks, and governments around the world need to treat them that way, building up our collective defenses again against biological threats.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.